Thing in progress.
Good evening and welcome to the August 19th meeting of the Kitsap County Planning Commission. Thank you for coming and thank you for your participation. Let's start out with introductions. Start on the right.
Kathy Meisenberg, North District.
David Vliet, North Kitsap.
Alan Beam, Central Kitsap.
Ashley Hall, South Kitsap.
Caleb Nelson, South Kitsap.
Danielle Douthit, South Kitsap.
Adrian, can you say hello?
Yep, Adrian Hampton, Central Kitsap.
Thank you. This is going to be a hybrid meeting and it has special protocols. Please silence all electronic devices during the meeting. If you're attending in person, please refrain from conversations with other members or staff during the meeting. If you wish to provide general public comment, you have two methods to do this. One is for virtual attendees, raise your hand at the appropriate time using the raise hand button at the bottom of the Zoom window. Your name will be called and your microphone will be unmuted. Second, call-in attendees can signal by pressing *9 on the keypad. Your last four digits of your phone number will be called and you will be connected. You may need to dial *6 to unmute your phone. Written comments for testimony can be submitted to the staff and emailed to cjewel@kitsap.gov by 2 p.m. of the day prior to the meeting. Please include the date of the meeting, the comments are meant for, your name, the agenda item, and the subject that you're addressing. Submitted comments will then be entered into the record at the appropriate time. For all speakers, please state your name and the general area where you live. Comments are normally limited to 2 minutes for general public comments and 3 minutes for a public hearing. These times are adjustable when appropriate. The first item is the adoption of the agenda.
I move for the adoption of the agenda as presented.
I second.
Are there any comments or discussion? All those in favor of approving the agenda as written, say aye.
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 Recently added to the docket was the minutes from the meeting 6/17 June. Has everybody had a chance to look at them? Okay, I need a motion to adopt the minutes.
I'll move to approve the minutes as written from June 17th.
I second.
Is there any discussion, comments, changes? All those in favor of adopting the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you very much. That brings us to the first general comment period. Do we have any comments from electronic? Mr. Palmer's got his hand raised.
Good evening. Assuming you can hear me, my comments are really questions relative to the 2x6 application review discussion that staff is going to present later. Here are two questions that I would like staff to address. Number one, why is it that the public gets no input on the design of the online permit system? I have much frustration with now 5 different systems, including the current 2x6 system. And if it wasn't for the chat people, it wouldn't work for me, period. Second question is, what you'll be presented, what staff intends to present is what constitutes a complete application. But if those guidelines don't address the application requirements for an individual application ahead of time, that's a problem. You only find out whether or not you comply after you go through a submittal process. And that's backwards the way it used to be. We used to have something you could download from the website, or you could get in the way of application material direct from the department as to what the criteria was for individual applications. I just submitted an application for which there is no application. So now I'm wondering what the standard is for application completeness when the county doesn't have an official application form. Reasonable use exception is the example. And anyway, I'd like staff to address those two points when they make their presentation. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Are there any comments from the room? Seeing none, we'll close the first general public session. That brings us to the work study for a public hearing on Roper Open Space application. No. It should light up red. There it is. Try again.
How about now? Oh, geez. Okay. Sorry. Murphy's Law. All right, so good evening, commissioners. My name is Jason Robert Walsh, and I'm a planner with Kitsap County Department of Community Development. Tonight, I am presenting open space application number 25-01464 for Roper, requested by applicants Alicia A. Roper, Kara D. Roper, and James D. Roper Life Estate. It's regarding a current use tax exemption for open space under Kitsap County Code 1812 and Revised Code of Washington 8434. The request is to transfer 16.95 of this. Let me pause and slow down. 15.95 of the 16.72 acres currently classified as undeveloped land and cabins by the assessor to current use open space. The reclassification is for tax purposes only and does not change the zoning of the property. Properties that qualify for current use open space must have at least two sensitive resources listed in Kitsap County Code 1812. Before I move on to my first slide, I'd like to address that under the executive summary, you'll see a resolution as attachment one. This is not required for today's commission meeting. However, your deliberation today will inform that resolution and thus be passed on to the Board of County Commissioners. That's why it is listed as one of the attachments. Okay. So here is a Kitsap County Commissioner District map. The red arrow is showing the approximate area within District 2 with no address, but the cross streets are Bethel Burley Road Southeast and Maple Road Southeast. The parcel numbers are, and there are three of them, so bear with me, 4859-002-004-0303, 4859-002-009-001, and 4859-003 2022-002-006. The combined acreage is 16.72 acres. What you see here is the critical areas map. It indicates a fish-bearing stream that is the dark blue line running north to south. It's also known as a type F stream. The green section is hydric soils. A freshwater forested shrub wetland is represented. It's a little difficult to see on this map, but running north to south, there's a swatch that looks as if it has like little scrub brush kind of icons in there. That is the forested shrub wetland, and then a FEMA 100-year floodplain indicated by the cross-hatching running roughly north to south on the parcel or on the project site. This is the zoning map for the subject properties, which are zoned rural protection with a density requirement of one dwelling unit per 10 acres. The adjacent parcels to the north, east, and south are also zoned rural protection, and the parcels adjacent to the west across Bethel Burley Road southeast are zoned rural residential. The surrounding land use is mixed with single-family homes to the north, south, and west, and undeveloped land to the north, south, and east. The request for reclassification is for tax purposes only and does not change the zoning of the property. Sorry. Okay, what we're looking at now is that this land is determined eligible for open space classification under the qualification criteria set forth by the State of Washington Open Space Act, under Chapter 8434, the Revised Code of Washington, and the Kitsap County Open Space Plan, Chapter 1812 in Kitsap County Code, with two high priority resources being wetlands, ponds, streams, and watersheds, one medium priority resource being a secondary stream buffer, and one low priority resource being the preservation of visual quality. Therefore, the Roper application request has been found eligible for a 50% reduction to the land value. Currently, the property owner does not choose to have public access, thus they are not exchanging public access for an additional 10% tax reduction. Upon the Planning Commission recommendation, the Board of County Commissioners will have final approval. This is a 2021 aerial photo of the site for context. For the context, historically speaking, this is an aerial from 1994. And before we move into public hearing on this project, I would like to introduce for the record that two public comments were received, but were not included in the staff report, but the staff report will be amended for that. First public comment was regarding the location of the Burley Creek. The Burley Creek was identified as being incorrectly labeled on the application by the commenter. Their other comment was that they believed that the designation of the project site as open space would impact their ability to receive grant funding for creek restoration work. Second comment received was from a commenter who chose to speak in support of the project, stating that there were valuable natural resources present on the project site and they would greatly appreciate the project's application's approval. And now I'd like to open up for questions.
Hello.
Yes, please.
Just to clarify on that first comment that came from the public. So if it's chosen to move forward to put this into open space as requested, I wasn't quite following the part about getting grant funding to be able to use for improvement of the riparian areas.
Yes. So the commenter had spoken to past experience working with Kitsap Conservation Corps to do restoration work on the river, or the creek, excuse me. And so they believed that the designation as open space would potentially negatively impact their ability to secure future grant funding to do future restoration work. We contacted Kitsap Conservation Corp, specifically the program manager.
Is that Kitsap Conservation District?
District. I apologize.
Oh, the only reason I know that is because I'm a board supervisor for them, too. So.
Thank you for catching that.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Sorry, Kitsap Conservation District, that he had worked in the past, the commentator had worked in the past with the Kitsap Conservation District to do restoration work, and they believed that the open space designation would negatively impact their ability to secure future grant funding for restoration work. contacted the district and was able to confirm that that would not impact their ability to secure grant funding and do future restoration work.
Thanks for that clarification, because I don't think it would either. Thank you.
Other questions? Adrian, questions?
I had a question regarding the staff report. Is this a good time for that?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay, great. So in the staff report, I believe on page 4, item 11, recommendation, just for the bullet number 1, it speaks to the land use agreement. So is Kitsap County the granting authority specifying the conditions that would ultimately end up in the land use agreement?
I will have to defer to my supervisor, Darren Gurney, on this one, if I could.
Thank you, Jason. So for the record, Darren Gurney, I'm the current planning supervisor of Department of Community Development. So I believe the question was, is Kitsap County imposing the conditions for the open space agreement? So it is a combination. We process the permit. We have conditions of approval that we would recommend as part of that permit. The taxation status is based on the fact that somebody is continuing their efforts in maintaining that the approvals. So if you start building on the property, the assessor is going to go out and indicate, hey, you're actually in conflict with the open space taxation rate because you're improving the property. It would be a little bit different if we were talking about conservation easements and things like that. So yes, we do initiate that that initial effort, and then there's a continuation that is monitored by others.
Thank you.
Of course.
Any other questions from the board? I believe the next step is to open this to public hearing. Yes, no? The next step is to open this to public hearing.
We'd like to open this up to public hearing.
I need a motion to open the public hearing.
I motion to move this to a public hearing.
Second.
We're now open for a public hearing on the open space application for the Ropers. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, my name is Alicia Roper, and I'm a co-owner of the land with my sister, Kara Roper, and our father left it to us. He, his grandfather owned the land and then gave it to his son, my grandfather, who lived there, and then my dad really loved, they all loved the land, they loved the creek, it's beautiful, and it's wetlands. I grew up in Kitsap County, but I live now in New Jersey. And the taxes, we've gotten many offers to, you know, log it, and we don't want to do that. We want to preserve it. We want it to, you know, I know that would be very disruptive to the ecosystem. So we would love this open space designation, and we're working towards possibly eventually donating it to the Peninsula Conservation. We are in conversation with them, but they said it's going to take at least a year to raise funds to do that so that they could maintain it going forward. Anyway, I appreciate you considering it for an open space. It's beautiful. It's you need a machete to get through it. It's very dense, very wet, and I think necessary for the environment. Thanks.
Do you mind stating your name for the record?
Oh, yes. Alicia Roper.
Any other public comments?
Good evening, Planning Commission. My name is Gary Schreier, and I submitted one of the public comments to Planner Jason Walsh. And Thanks for the opportunity of making a comment on this application, Roper. So I live on an adjoining parcel to the Roper application, acreage. And my parcel number is 48590030030104. And it's at, the west side is on, has a Bethel Burley address, 14229. And the east side is on the stream, just west of the Roper, one of the Roper parcels. The issue I have with the application and how it was reviewed and is that the application has a hand-drawn sketch which shows the stream on the Roper parcel. It is not on the Roper parcel. It is on my parcel, and it is on another person's parcel, my neighbor to the north of my property. So it's the stream is misrepresented in its location on the application. Okay, and my concern is that this will affect my ability to do anything on my property in a later period, whether it be conservation district work, whether it be trying to sell the property, or even perhaps I'll be remotely subdividing it. So I don't see why that the stream can't be positively identified for where it actually is. The county GIS records, online records that, you know, anyone can search, public records, the stream is shown as an overlay on the basic land contours, and the overlay is shifted. And there's a cautionary note in the GIS information that overlays can be sort of not, you know, exactly where they should be in actuality. And that's the case with Burley Creek. It's too far to the east, according to the GIS county records. In actuality, according to my property and my deed and the property line, the stream is on my property, not on the Roper property. And the property to the north of mine, the Hensley property, which is parcel number 48590030003005, the stream is also on its property, not on the Roper's property to the east. So I've got nothing against you know, the land use and the tax reduction on for the Roper's property, but the way the application is done and the way it's being reviewed and approved, it doesn't take into a fact that the stream is completely mislocated, and that's the main reason why this property has really sort of open space value. There's absolutely no marketable timber anywhere on my property or any of the properties around there. If you've ever driven on Burley Creek, it was logged out decades ago. It's just alder, and it's wet, and there's nothing marketable on it. There's no eagle nesting. There's no, of course, it's good for salmon and other aquatic life, but nothing marketable, unfortunately. So again, my concern again is not with you know, the incentive for tax reduction for the Roper Trust. It's that the stream be properly identified in the application and moving forward with how the planners have reviewed this, so that it gets documented correctly, so everyone sees it. This is where the stream is. It's not over there. It's actually over here. Thank you.
For the record, you are for or against the open space?
As the application has been reviewed, I'm against it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, ma'am.
My name is Sharon Feeney, and I'm the mother of Alicia and Kara, and I also drew up the site map. And where the creek is on the site map, I got from the county plan, the the parcel maps. So I if it's different than that, I don't know, except that for years it's tumbling down, but a cabin, and it's right on the creek. And that property has been understood to be owned by the Ropers forever. But if, you know, if the county, I would think would, the county would know where the creek actually is. There are other side creeks also on the Roper property. But so if it's different, then I would think that Jason would be able to find that out and put it straight. Is that clear? Questions?
Any other comments? Hearing no more further comments, we're going to close the open portion of this meeting. Go back to work study. And you're up.
So myself and three of my colleagues were able to actually make a site visit. We walked we didn't walk the entirety of all three of the subject parcels, but we did walk each of the three parcels, specifically walking in the area that was just spoken to where the cabin is located. And we were able to determine not the entire course of the creek, but we were able to determine presence of the creek on all three subject parcels. Now, is it mapping the exact course that is on our GIS parcel search maps? No, it is not. We can actually do some correlation with our LIDAR mapping or contour mapping from 2017 layer. That's something that you can see if you were to use our parcel search website and look up the subject parcels. You can turn on this layer to be able to see contours and align those with topography to be able to give you a general understanding of where you should do your investigation and where you should look. We did not perform a comprehensive stream determination, but as I stated just a moment ago, we did walk the properties and were able to determine the location of the creek at various locations on each of the subject properties. It does, but to the comment from Mr. Schreier, I agree that the course that is mapped on our initial layer with parcel search is not necessarily as accurate as it should be.
Do you have a recommendation?
Well, for this particular type of project, it is not required that a stream determination be performed. A stream determination would be required, or a biologic assessment would be required if this was a development project, if they were to be applying for a building permit. But as part of the open space program, that is not a requirement.
So as I understand it, what is before us is solely the property of the Ropers and whether or not they want that in open space.
Correct. Yes, those three subject parcels being nominated for current use open space.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions? Yes, sir. We'll reopen for public comment.
Yeah.
So the thing is, this whole thing is centered around the location of the water body. And for this particular type of application to not, you know, rely on very well-identified location of that water body is ridiculous. I mean, that's the whole crux of this application, is to get a tax advantage for an open space because of various parameters, you know, wildlife and, you know, proximity to water body, or including the water body, and for it to be not very specifically located, it just seems irrational that it would be approved without really identifying exactly where the stream is.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Back to work study. Are there any comments from the commission?
Is it possible to have this and just state that the stream touches each property but doesn't show its actual location on the document? Because, I mean, I feel like that would be the middle ground, right?
think we should have just gone to microphones at the table. So yes, these are not direct correlations. So you can have this parcel, you can have the stream meandering through this parcel and it qualifies for the open space. It could meander over onto the other parcel, the adjacent landowner, be on that parcel for part of it. It could be that there's two different water channels, but they're exclusive. Like, they're not going to be tied through a legal record in that standpoint for the open space. So if we have open space on this, it does qualify for the open space requirements.
Could we, because it appears very clearly, like, where the stream is. Like, it looks like a legitimate map. So could you just put a note and state that it's not exact?
Typically, you would have something on the map that says not to scale, but we require scaled drawings. But, you know, the other part of this is that if you have a named water course, I can understand that there's a possible discrepancy in where that naming of the water course occurs. If it is confirmed to be on another location, that doesn't necessarily deny the existence of a fish-type stream, even if the named water course is in a different location. It's still very possible that a fish-type stream is existing, and typically when we're looking there for a fish stream, you're looking at water flows, and the amount of water flow, it takes away the sedimentation, it exposes gravels. That indicates your water flow as well. And so it's very possible you have two fish-bearing streams that are parallel. And that wouldn't, from my understanding, that wouldn't impact any kind of future actions. This is just a limitation to where you're not going to be developing this parcel in the future.
To your knowledge, has there been any wetland delineation studies ever done on any three of these parcels? And historically at any point in time? Okay.
So I'll read it into the record. So the wetland is a DNR mapped wetland.
Okay.
So it is identified on a state map.
Okay. That's good enough. Thank you.
Any further questions?
Do we have Jenny?
Looks like Jenny's online.
Hi there. For the record, my name is Jenny Kreifels, and I'm with DCD Planning or Department of Community Development. And I just wanted to mention also that if a property owner feels that something is not mapped correctly in the DNR mapping or, you know, the parcel search mapping, then there is a process called, it's a stream typing modification or water modification process. I don't know the entirety of the cost of that application, but it gets together everyone that would be on the stream typing or stream ID typing team. And I believe a site evaluation is one way to start that process. And what happens is site visits are done by the tribes, WDFW, and then DNR. And, of course, if the proponent has or the requester of the application has a biologist, they would be on site. And then they walk the property. We all walk the property, a county representative. So new maps need to be created. It needs to be proved that stream has located or is no longer existing or needs to be changed in some way. And so that's how it starts. But the application is on the Department of Natural Resource website, and we also have a link somewhere, I'm sure, but I just want to let everyone know that is a possibility if someone truly feels that critical areas are not proper. So thank you.
Any other commission comments? Okay.
Chair, you'll need to reopen the public hearing if there are additional public comments in the public hearing record.
Yes, please.
All right, thank you. Hearing Ms. Kreifel's explanation of going about this process of...
One second here.
It's
the public hearing is now open. Go.
Chair, please propose a motion to open the public hearing again.
If I that's need a what motion you... to reopen the public hearing.
I propose to reopen the public comment hearing regarding the Roper application.
I second.
Any opposed? Reopen.
Thank you. So just quickly, just to follow up on, I believe, Ms. Kreifeld's comment. If there is a process to properly identify and locate a body of water, then why didn't the applicant do it? Why didn't the planner do it? In my observation, it should be a requirement, and it's really just sloppy work, just to throw it down and say, okay, there's a stream, it's on a map, and that's good enough. It's not good enough. I mean, this stuff is very important, and it should be properly identified so everyone knows where the open space is. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Any other comments? Is it okay to respond, or is that not?
I guess my comment is, we have to go with, you know, the information that we're given, and we're given some pretty clear visual. I mean, we have a blue stream on here, a type F stream, which isn't even close to the boundary line of the parcels that we are identified on here. So I don't know. I mean, I would need to see something that says that it isn't there. I mean, it seems like it is very much there. So
just, and also along that same vein, knowing that you were boots on the ground and were able to walk the parcels and make a positive identification on each parcel, I think is all we can do is with the most information that we have today. And I agree. I think that that's pretty founded data for what we have in front of us today.
Okay. Do have a question for one of the planners. Was there, hard to find on any of the auditor's records, but what was the most recent survey done for any of these properties? If you have that, or were you able to find one prior to going out and doing your...
And have we closed the public comment?
We're now closed for public comment.
Okay. Do we want to open the deliberations?
I will open up this discussion for commission deliberation.
Do we hear a motion?
I motion to move into deliberations on the Roper application.
Second.
Objections? Seeing none, open for deliberation.
I'll answer the question, and then I'll just take this mic back just in case. No, we did not do research into any current surveys.
Opinion. The question before us is the Roper property worthy of having an open space designation? And that's what we're here to decide. I believe the next step in this is for us to vote.
Are we ready to move into the findings of fact?
I think we have to vote before the findings of fact, don't we?
Are we making a motion to approve?
That's where I'm headed.
Do I hear a motion to recommend or not recommend approval?
I make a motion to recommend approval of the Roper application.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? Angela? Adrian?
Actually, I just have one comment on that. Just, we're, you know, volunteering for this board and for the Conservation District Board. The Conservation District does a lot of work, spends a lot of money trying to fix riparian habitat. And if you have people coming forward to with fish-bearing stream habitat and wanting to put it into open space, That's going to be very beneficial to the work that's trying to be done to restore the lowered salmon populations that we've experienced. So that was just my comment.
Any other comments? All those in favor of making the Roper space open space, say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it, unanimous decision. This will close the deliberations portions and leads us to the findings of fact. We have before us a draft findings of fact. Does anybody have any objections to that? Comments?
Only comment is I see here on the findings of fact that there was an opportunity for comment on the notice of application for this back on May 30th. And it looks like no comments were provided at that time. So I feel confident with what was presented with us today, and the opportunity was given to the public to present comment. That definitely should be moving forward with a positive resolution.
Can I have a vote? All those in favor of approving the Roper open space, say aye.
Aye.
We now have a findings of fact that we can forward to the board. This should close the Roper application, and we'll move on to work study for briefing on 2x4 permitting applications. Thank you, Roper.
All right. Good evening, Planning Commission. My name is Caitlin Schlatter, and I am a program specialist and 2x6 coordinator at the Department of Community Development. And I'm here today to give you an overview of DCD's new 2x6 review program. Senate Bill 5290 was in effect as of January 1 of this year, and so we've built this program in response to that. The Senate bill essentially requires quicker review timelines on select type 2 and type 3 permits. So I'm excited to share some of that with you today. I did note in general public comment before the meeting, when the meeting was beginning, that there were some questions, and I'll be able to address those towards the end of the presentation. So a little bit of history of how 2x6 review came about kind of goes back to the beginning of January of 2024 when we hired our consultant, Kurt Lattimore, with the Lattimore Company, and we hired him to conduct an analysis on our review process once we heard about Senate Bill 5290, contracted with him to see what his recommendations would be on how to improve our permitting process for the permits that would be affected by the Senate bill. In July of 2024, we hosted a future state mapping event with DCD staff and community members and stakeholders, where we gathered everyone, and I'll talk a little bit more about what that event looked like on the next slide. But a lot of collaboration and community involvement in that event that we hosted. And then directly after we hosted that event in July of last year, we received formal recommendations from our consultant on how we could better improve our process to meet the required timelines established by the bill. And in October of 2024, that is when we onboarded a 2x6 coordinator, which is myself, as a brand new position, as someone who is going to be facilitating the life of these permits through the 2x6 process. In November and December of last year, we held multiple brainstorming events that included DCD staff, some of the same and different added community members and stakeholders as well, where we worked on intake checklists and intake resources that would support the 2x6 intake process that we were working on implementing and developing. And then in January of this year, we got together an internal project team with subject matter experts from each division within our department, and we created a project plan where we would create a phased approach on implementation of all of the different permit types that would be affected by the bill. So I mentioned the future state mapping event that was held in July of last year. And before we received our formal recommendations from our consultant, we held this event in this room. We had over 50 participants. Again, that was going to be internal staff at DCD. We had members from Public Works, community members, stakeholders. Our consultant, of course, was there. And we mapped out the current state process for Title 21 permitting and what that looked like. And we had a full 2 days of collaboration on where we could improve. So we looked at the current state, and you can see in the photo below that was our current state. It was lined up on this wall, and the photo above displays all of the, just a very small section of that process flow. And everybody had the opportunity to walk through that as a group and then provide their feedback in the form of sticky notes that we placed all over the process map. And later we collected all that information and indexed it and provided that to the consultant so he could take all of those recommendations and suggestions into consideration when he was providing his final recommendations for us. So it was a really great collaborative experience where, you know, again, we involved community members and stakeholders, and it was a very positive event, and we wanted to ensure that we were collecting opinions and suggestions from people that are not just within the county at DCD, but also outside as well that work through our permitting process. So a little bit about 2x6 and what it is, what kind of permit types these are affecting. The idea of 2x6 is that there would be two review cycles lasting 6 weeks each. These are going to affect select Type 2 and Type 3 permits. According to the Senate bill that was in effect as of the first of the year, our requirements for Type 2s are 100 days and Type 3s are 170 days. 34 permit types fall into the 2x6 review model. So these are going to be our select site development activity permits and land use permits. And total in community development, we have over 200 permit types. So 34 permit types are affected by 2x6. 34 permit types are about half of our Title 21 permits that are affected by the bill. And one thing that we really focused on while developing this 2x6 review process is quality submittals. Since we have quicker review timelines, we needed to ensure that our customers and community members are submitting quality applications and quality submittals so we can review in an efficient timeline. Some of the things that we developed to support that are very robust intake checklists that walk customers through what's expected to be submitted and required to be submitted for certain permit types. We have our prep report, which I'll get into here in a moment and provide a little bit more insight on what that looks like. We have submittal success guides and site plan example packets that we have created. And then we have revised brochures, publications that we also have on our website as listed resources to make it through the 2x6 process as well. And then another element to 2x6 is if you're a customer that has a 2x6 permit type, there's a lot more touch time with the assigned reviewers on your project. So you have intake meetings, debrief meetings, and I'll get into a little bit more on what we offer as far as meeting goes here in a moment as well. And then, of course, controlling the amount of work that we have coming in. Since we have to meet these review timelines, we're asking for more information from the customers up front. When do you anticipate submitting your application, and when can we get you in for an intake screening? So those are a few of the things that we've developed to support the 2x6 process. I mentioned the prep report, and I want to take some time to highlight what the prep report offers in terms of resources before someone applies for a permit application. I know this is a little bit difficult to see, but the prep report is a GIS map that our department created where you can research your parcel and find out more about what kind of critical areas are on your property. So when you look up your parcel, you're going to have a result of red, yellow, green. And green means you're in the clear and there aren't any critical areas to be aware of. Yellow means that there's been something identified on the property, and same with red. So in this example on the screen, you can see that this parcel is a red parcel, which means there is an identified critical area. In this one specifically, there were geo hazards on the area, on the parcel, I believe slopes, if I can read it, it's kind of tiny, but slopes were identified on the property indicating that the parcel is red. And what this does for the customer is they see that they have a yellow or red parcel, that there might be some research to do on that parcel, depending on what kind of permit they want to apply for, what kind of project they want to do on their parcel. So it just gives them a little bit of insight about what they're dealing with before they get into the permitting process, which is always helpful. I would like to add, too, that this prep report was submitted for a NACO award, and we were granted that award this year, so that's a big success, as the map was a major, tons of work for our department to create, and it was nationally recognized for what it's doing for our customers. So a little bit about what the life cycle is of a 2x6 permit is within the process. Tried to keep this high level because it is somewhat of a longer process depending on if you make it through your initial intake screening or not. But step one is the customer would submit the permit application. Once the permit application has been submitted, there is an internal intake screening that's scheduled where assigned reviewers will look at the submittal and ensure that it is ready to go under first cycle of review. After that intake screening is conducted, there's going to be a couple different options of what could happen depending on how it goes. There could be a notice of complete or a notice of incomplete. If you receive a notice of complete and the permit has been deemed sufficient enough to go under first cycle review, that notice of complete will go out and the cycle one review will begin. If the reviewers deem that the permit application is not ready for review due to missing items or maybe submitting a waiver when in fact you did need a fire flow letter or things of that nature, there will be a notice of incomplete that is sent out to the customer and they need to go work on those items that are deemed insufficient and request a second intake screening when ready. If you do make it into cycle one review, that means that the 6-week clock has begun and you can expect to receive an information request with comments at that 6-week mark. If there are no return comments and there was a successful first cycle, then the permit will be approved. If there is return comments and an information request goes out, then the customer will work on their resubmittal. They'll go to a resubmittal screening before going into second cycle. And the resubmittal screening is great because it gives the reviewers an opportunity to look at those resubmitted items to ensure that those are sufficient enough for second cycle review. What's also nice about that resubmittal meeting is that the customers have the opportunity to attend. So that's been proven to be really helpful where we can loop the customers into those meetings with reviewers and get them face-to-face time where they can discuss any comments, questions, or concerns before they go into the next cycle. So that has been very helpful for our customers and internally as well. So we have, like I mentioned, 34 permit types that are affected by the 2x6 process in Senate Bill 5290. So to ensure that we paid close attention to and gave attention to these different permit categories and made sure that we caught anything, paid attention to those as we were implementing them, we wanted to phase those out. So The first phase, we focused on our site development activity permits, and we went live with those as of March 31st. Phase two were our preliminary plats, and we went live with that phase on June 6th. And then our third phase, which was our biggest phase, we just went live on August 11th. So those, I believe we have 17 of our land use permits that are part of 2x6 now as of last week. I will say when I created the presentation, there have been things that have changed since I turned it in to Clara last week. So I had noted that we had 18 2x6 permits in different phases. So some notice of completes, some of incompletes, and pending intakes. However, now, as of today, we have 24 permits in. So since going live with that third phase with our land use permits, we have seen an uptick in submittals and what's coming in for 2x6. So instead of the 18 that we have in now, we have 24 that are currently in the process. And that concludes my presentation to you all tonight. I did want to take an opportunity just to, if it's appropriate, to address the questions that were asked during general public comment. And I do have those written down. Give me just one moment to pull those up because I took notes of those. So Mr. Palmer asked a couple. The first was, why does the public not get any input into the design of the online permitting system? That's not a question that I'm able to answer tonight, but for the record, if anybody or Mr. Palmer does have any specific examples or issues that they're experiencing with the online permitting system that relates to 2x6, and if you're still online, you can email me, and my email is on the screen, and I'd be happy to dig into some of those questions that you may have. And then there was another question about what deems an application complete or not. And applications, once they're submitted, they go through a couple different checkpoints. They first go to the permit techs, which are just ensuring that everything that was asked to be required, or I'm sorry, asked to be submitted is. And just kind of deeming those applications counter-complete. Are the documents named of the proper naming convention that we're asking them to be? Did you submit what you were actually supposed to and things of that nature? Now, once those applications pass through the permit tech counter-completeness determination, that is when they'll go to the intake screening where all of the reviewers really crack open those submittal documents and ensure that if a document has been submitted, it is actually filled out, and making sure that those documents are complete enough for review to begin. We do have, like I mentioned, quite a few resources online, like our intake checklists, that all align with what we're asking for in our application software, which is called Clarity, also maybe known as Camino, if you've heard it called Camino before as well. So really, our permit techs are processing for high-level completeness, and then once the application makes it through that first checkpoint, it will go to its first intake screening where, like I mentioned, the reviewers will crack open those submittal documents and ensure that they are ready for review to begin. I know that there was also a mention of reasonable use applications being available in Clarity. I just learned what a reasonable use application was today. I know that those are a little bit more rare in their occurrence here at the department. So we did receive that application that was specifically being talked about. It came through as a variance. And I already have some time with my team to discuss how we can make that more clear in our permit application portal to where we can offer that specific permit type application. So that's something that I'm more than happy to follow up with a commenter about as I find out more information. So I just wanted to make sure that I addressed those questions and happy to answer any questions that any of the Planning Commission has.
Thank you, and thank you for addressing those questions. Mm-hmm. I do, just curiosity, for with Clarity Camino to then SmartGov, is there a reason that there's Clarity Camino first and then SmartGov, or not?
Yeah, I mean, we do have two different softwares that we're using, and I know that maybe in the future we'll be looking at switching to a software where that's all combined into one. To my knowledge, it's just we've been using Clarity for a while now, just as the permitting application software. And then once it's, you know, deemed complete and the permit's created, then it moves to SmartGov. So yeah, two separate programs that we're using. But I know that in the future, I believe that they might look at combining those or finding a new software that kind of does everything all in one. But I'm not too sure. Kind of, I know that we've been using both of those for quite a while, so I don't have too much information on that as of right now. Did that? I know that maybe didn't answer your question, but it would be ideal though, right, to have everything all in one. Yeah, so that's something that we've been looking and talking about, but more to come on that.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah.
So I have some questions for you.
Sure.
So when you spoke about the community members attending the workshops, how did you choose those community members? Was there like a posting out where the public could attend? Were they personal invites? And if they were personal invites, what made up those community members? Were they developers, builders?
Yeah, great question. That was, I was outside of that process of how those were selected. I know that the commissioners, the county commissioners were involved in that selection of who was involved in those workshops. I don't believe anything was posted, but again, I know that there was commissioner involvement in who they selected. We did have stakeholders from the community, like developers, and members of various groups. However, we also had community members that have gone through the permitting process that maybe had maybe brought questions or concerns before to the commissioners, and maybe that is why that they were selected. But it was definitely a mix of people that have applied for single-family resident permits, and that's all they had experience in before, or selected by the commissioners. But I can find out a little bit more detail about that, and I'm happy to get back to you on that.
That's fine. I was actually kind of curious as to whether or not it was publicized to the public or if it was actually personal invites or, you know, the county asking specific people.
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I remember I was absolutely at the event and I helped facilitate it, as a task in my old position that I was in. But I wasn't a part of all of the planning and the invitations. But again, I'll get you the answer to that question and get back to you on that.
Great. Yeah. And I have just two more.
Sure.
Real quick. So when you brought up the slide, what is 2x6? It explained with multiple bullets. And I was just curious when you had mentioned the robust intake process equals quality submittals, which is great. Those bulleted items such as checklists and brochures and publications, are you speaking of items that you're bringing based off of the 2x6 process? So these are new ideas. Did the county have any of these bulleted items prior to the 2x6 workshop?
Yeah, so we've always had our brochures and our publications, but really the other things that you see, like the intake checklists, to that specifically, now we have an intake checklist guide that's on our website where we have basically checklists that show what are the required submittal items for any type of permit, whether it's 2x6 or not. And so that's something we developed in response to 2x6 and that process. Before, I don't believe we had any publicized intake checklists. I know that in our permit application portal or Clarity, those align with the things. It has logic built into it, depending on what permit type you select that you're applying for, then it will show you what's required. But we wanted something publicized because we were asking for a little bit more detail up front, so we wanted to reflect that in our intake checklists and Clarity. The prep report was new, and that's been worked on since last year, so that was an element of 2x6 in our overall prep initiative. The submittal success guide, that was something new that was added. So we created that. If we're asking for quality submittals, we want to make sure that people have all the information that they need. So a lot of that is reflected in the submittal success guide. Site plan examples was another one that was newly created too. So a lot of the things that we had before kind of surrounded our brochures and our publications and what was already logged in clarity of what we're asking for. But things like our intake checklist, the prep report, the submittal success guide, those are all new things that we developed to support the 2x6 process.
Great.
Yeah.
And one last question.
Sure.
On the cycle, the process, 2x6 cycle process that you have outlined in item number 5 or step 5,
sure.
It talks about the cycle 1 review is 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Are you returning comments back at the 6-week mark, or are you giving comments as you go along within the 6 weeks?
You get them at the 6-week mark. Mm-hmm. So reviewers have 6 weeks once that permit goes under review to put in their comments. Once it hits that 6-week mark and the step due dates are all due, that's when, if there are comments, we push out the information request to the customer. So they see it all in one document once it's pushed out at the end of the 6-week cycle. Yeah. Any other questions?
Adrian?
Thank you, and thank you so much for the great presentation. You had mentioned the brochure or, you know, how to successfully write, submit, and go through the process, and I just wanted to highlight for the rest of the commissioners here that on this slide, it reads like step 1 through 8, but on your brochure, you also highlight an optional, meet with a coordinator or kind of go through and review your process before you even start. And so I just thought that was really great that you all open up that opportunity for someone to go through a review meeting before starting the process to, you know, ask those questions and make sure that it can be successful. So thanks for having that great online resource.
Yeah, absolutely. We do also, and since we launched the prep report, and that was a new tool that we're asking people to use, and a copy of the prep report for the specific parcel for the permit that you're applying for is a required submittal item. It's a new tool. Any new tool that we're asking people to use or requiring them to use can also come with a little confusion sometimes too. So we have a meeting option online where if you are trying to figure out the prep report and you have questions surrounding your parcel, red, yellow, or green, there's an option to meet with a planner to specifically discuss the prep report and the results it's providing too. So we know that we're adding some requirements around intake, uploading a copy of your prep report, but we also in turn wanted to ensure that we're giving customers the opportunity to talk to staff about those things since they're new. So,
thank you for the great presentation, Caitlin. You're educating me with something that I don't know that much about. So, I know like most counties are understaffed. Do you feel like this process has kind of helped things with regards to the submittal process, or are you guys getting a lot more workload now than you had before, or is it just making it more efficient? Or
yeah, I mean, 2x6 has been great. It's keeping us in line with the required timeline set by Senate Bill 5290, so that's the priority. I will say that, for example, submittal standards, that's one thing that we enforced when we, I believe it was a couple months ago, and it wasn't necessarily only for 2x6 permits, but for any type of permit, we're asking people to, when you upload your documents, have them, you know, be named according to this naming convention. And so there's different things that we're asking for that will help us be more efficient, and it really has helped. So if someone were, for example, to submit an application and they have all their submittal documents named a bunch of different various things, before that would have taken us quite a long time to kind of work through, rename ourselves, and that could delay that permit getting to intake or going under review or completeness determination. So with little things like that and the improvements we've made and more upfront work from the customer that we're asking for when they're applying, that does definitely helps our process and then in turn helps their permit move along quicker. A lot of different things have gone into helping us be more efficient, and quality submittals definitely is at the top of that list. So
thank you.
I have a couple questions. What's your current backlog? You've got 24 of them starting in this process.
Mm-hmm.
How many are you pushing ahead of that? How many do you have in process now?
Yeah, so we do have, I believe I said it was...
You said 24.
24. So yep. 24.
But how many permits are you currently working on?
24.
No.
Are you talking about outside of 2x6?
Yes.
Oh, I'm not sure. A very high number of permits. 2x6 is separate from the backlog.
What's being done to help the backlog get done so you can use this process?
Yeah, so I'm not able to answer that question for you since it is outside of 2x6, but I'd be happy to get you some answers on that after the meeting. I'm going to have to ask someone else for those answers for you.
Is there any consideration for posting online current status so a person that's got an application in could see where they are in this process?
Yeah, we do have a really cool interactive dashboard available on our website. So if you are curious where your permit's at in line, whether it's 2x6 or not, you could go onto the dashboard, type in your information, your permit number, and see where it falls in the queue. That's more so for outside of 2x6. So there is that public information on where someone is at in the queue.
Will 2x6 also have that kind of status?
Yeah, probably eventually, maybe. We haven't scratched the surface on putting something outwardly facing as far as like a dashboard or any information. Luckily, I work super closely with all of the 2x6 customers, so they know where they're at in the process. We haven't talked about that quite yet. So.
And what's the penalty if you go over your timeline?
There are things that are built into the Senate bill where if we did take longer than 6 weeks, there are other criteria that we're meeting, so we're not going to get penalized by the state. But I can't speak to those specific.
Why?
I'm sorry? You didn't speak into the microphone.
I asked why.
Oh, okay. Sure, yeah.
Hi there. I'm Cecilia Olson. I'm an assistant director with DCD. I've been with the department since 2018, so I have some answers to all of your questions, actually. But specifically with Senate Bill 5290, the way that it was written, there were penalties for fees. However, they also caveated it with a menu of 10 options if a local jurisdiction were to adopt some of these 10 options, which many of them we already have in place with our current processes, then we would not have to refund fees if we went beyond the timelines that were established. And the other thing that is written in the bill is, so we have to report to Commerce annually. And they've identified specific criteria for what permit types, mostly housing related, that we have to report on and how long it took. And then we also have to publish that information on our website too annually. And if over a period of, I think it's 5 years, if we're not meeting the timelines on 50% or more of those permits, then we have those 10 items, that criteria to have to not have to refund fees. We have to take those into consideration with our next comp plan update.
Okay, how many permits are processed now?
Off the top of my head, I do not know exactly how many permits we have under review, but I can say that we have taken measures to address backlog, and we are fully staffed from a review standpoint. However,
that's good news.
That does not mean that we are fully trained. So. Our backlog number since Reef came on board has gone down 11 weeks. So we are tracking it actively on a weekly basis to see what improvements we've made week over week.
So what's the average now for process through the system?
Average number of days? I also don't have that off the top of my head. But we have a lot of metrics, so I would be able to go and look and access the information.
I just see this wave. You got to get out of the wave for the 2x6 to be successful.
Yeah, and there are some outliers that kind of drag our average down just because they're special circumstance. Every project is unique. And so that's something else that we are planning to address in the future is how we treat these special projects that maybe don't move efficiently through 2x6 because there are extraordinary things about them.
And Mr. Palmer mentioned that there was some question of what's required at the beginning of the process.
What's required at the beginning of 2x6?
Do you have posted the requirements for all these 34 different methods?
Yeah, so it is kind of consolidated into like packets. So I can understand that could be a little bit overwhelming for some folks where all of the intake requirements, the submittal requirements, are in a single packet. So you do have to kind of find what permit type it is that you're applying for to be able to identify what possible submittal items you would be required. But some of those are still site specific. So we really encourage people to consult with us so that we can help with that. And somewhat related to you had the question about the lists. Yes, okay. So we went fully digital in 2018, and prior to that, we were still accepting paper applications, and at that point, we did have paper checklists with all these submittal items that were required for the different permit types. We made the move to fully digital in 2018, and rather than having those paper applications and checklists, we used a software called Cognito to build those applications with the submittal items. And then when our SmartGov permitting software we found to be inadequate for the application portion. And so our previous director contracted to use a separate permit application software to try to improve it for the applicant, which is why we have two separate softwares. Our permit software, SmartGov, is from 2012 and has been sold three different times since I've been with the county. So that is kind of what we're working with. And we made the decision to use what is now Clarity, it also got bought out, for a permit application portal. And when we built that, we took all of the information from those permit questionnaires and put it into Clarity to create what was supposed to be, and it was intended to be, a customized checklist for applicants based on how they answered questions. So there's a survey at the beginning, depending on what permit type they select, and how they answered those questions, it would populate their required submittal items. And, that was the intent, and it was supposed to make for a better experience for the applicant, but it obviously there has been gaps in information, and so that's why we're bringing back these intake checklists to hopefully improve that with this process. Any more questions?
Who is your customer?
Who is my customer?
The question is, if I walked into want to build a house,
mm-hmm.
without going through a developer or consultants or anything else, could I walk through that process as a citizen and get out the other end?
It depends. So not every, like Caitlin was trying to explain, not every permit type is going to be 2x6. And that's because 5290, Senate Bill 5290, which is actually now codified into RCW 3670B, the timelines are established based on whether or not a permit requires a notice or a hearing. So there's a project permit that requires no notice, doesn't require a hearing. The timelines for that permit type is 65 days. And then you move up to 100 days for projects that require notice but no hearing, and then 170 days for projects that require both. So if you're a owner builder and you walk in and you just want to build a single family residence that doesn't require any other permit type, then it's not 2x6. That's actually, building permits are exempt from those timelines. And our internal goal for building permits is 30 days on first cycle and 14, 15 days on subsequent cycles.
So it's not 100 days then?
No. No, there's RCW 3670B does not have requirements for building permits.
I was just curious if a local citizen could actually go through that process.
Yeah. I mean, there are situations where they may need, you know, a critical area buffer reduction permit that requires noticing. That would be 2x6. Or if it's a variance, that would go to hearing.
Thank you.
I know. It's complex.
It's a huge job.
Yeah. Any other questions that we can answer?
Out of curiosity, what kind of training and things are new staff or people that are moved up in positions? What is a DCD? How are they helping with that? And I guess what does that look like for those staff?
We have a mentor program so that they're working with a senior staff member on training. And then depending on the position, there potentially are specific targeted trainings for each, you know. I come from development engineering, where we did stormwater review. And within development engineering, we have targeted trainings, one-on-ones with different staff members that have already been fully trained within the division, where it might be one day you're getting trained on minimum requirements number 1 through 5, and then the next day you're getting trained on how to write a notice of application. It's really dependent on the position that the person is coming into, and it's something that we're looking at expanding to. There's a lot that we have to improve on in the department, and I'll acknowledge that.
Anything else? Thank you very much. Good luck.
Thank you.
The next thing is sewers. Do we want to take a 5-minute break or anything? Are we ready to proceed on? Okay. Next session is a work study on 2025 standards for sanitary sewer construction update.
So we're just that excited for sewer? Okay. Hopefully it doesn't take me 5 minutes to get booted up. Clara, it's asking me for a passcode. Is that in the email?
Okay. Are you ready? I'll give you the passcode.
The 19697?
Yes.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, commissioners. Thank you for the slight pause and your patience. My name, again, is Anthony Burgess. I'm a capital project manager with the Public Works Sewer Utility Division. We talked a little bit about standards a couple weeks ago. Here is our second opportunity to ask some questions. You gave me some feedback in that first workshop. We will be going over that today. At a high level, we'll go over the schedule, the edits which were requested based on our last discussion, and then we'll get into the other side of the update, which is what we have done in comparison to those original 1996 standards. And then we'll have some open discussion after that. Just as a recap of our schedule, today is our second work study. We have planned for a public hearing on September 2nd.
That hearing is actively advertised. So with our commentary tonight, any requests for revisions would potentially delay that hearing date. So I just ask that you keep that in mind when we go through our open discussion. This is a slide which I presented last time. It breaks the standards update down into two parts. Priority one, which is what I had called the jurisdiction means and methods. These are the nuts and bolts of how we put pipe together and is essentially what we need to do as part of this standards update. Priority two was focusing on development issues. These were the policies and jurisdictional preferences, which we discussed 2 weeks ago. So as a follow-up to all of the good discussion we had, I wanted to briefly go over the section numbers. I'm not going to have a slide for each of these just because we had great discussion, but the requested edits which were made, these are the responses to those requests. So section 1.1.7, that was the discussion of allowing infrastructure within private roadways to be maintained as private. There was a lot of good feedback from the KBA on that topic and robust discussion with this group. What I have done is I have taken that out of the proposal. So we agreed that it would be better to pursue that at a later date with some more backup on our end for how we would plan to do that. So that section will now read that commercial private property and residential private property will not require dedication unless otherwise required by the division manager. There are certain circumstances where we will need to require that. That provides the latitude for some critical thinking. The next section had to do with the blockage policy, which we were introducing into the document. This was intended to mirror what City of Bremerton has in their standards. This group identified some confusing language. It lacked a cadence of steps to guide the homeowner through the process. It also was silent on the issue if the homeowner were to provide efforts financially on their end, and the county was ultimately at fault or responsible for the fix. So we've added that language to be a little more clear for the homeowner and for staff, and we've added in the language that if there is a blockage in the right-of-way and the homeowner contributed financially to finding that, we would go through a reimbursement process on a case-by-case scenario. There are some specific criteria we've added to that. If that blockage is due to improper maintenance or negligence of the system, there's an opportunity to refute those charges, and that's to protect the utility. I did want to spend a little bit of time to ask if there's any questions on those first two topics before I move on. Okay. There was a great comment about differing materials and how to provide some flexibility for project sites. That was in a section in the document previously, but it was buried in the text, so we broke that out as its own line just so it can be more easily found. And we clarified any non-approved materials as a more general term than specifying a restriction on only pea gravel. Again, we don't want to allow materials that do not provide us the most robust system for long-term maintenance and eventual replacement. And then section 6.2.4a had to do with how ERUs were considered for accessory dwelling units. So equivalent residential units, that is ultimately how we base our connection fees or newcomer assessments. We treat ADUs differently depending on if they're connected to the existing plumbing and water meter on the property. So if you were to build an ADU at your house and we serve you sewer, as long as you connect to the common lines that already exist on the property, we don't charge extra for that. If you require a new meter or a new sanitary sewer connection to the roadway, we do assess an ERU for that proposal. And we work with projects to make sure that they know that so that they're not inadvertently increasing the cost of their project. And that was the recap from last week. Any questions? Wonderful. Okay. So going back to part one, which is the jurisdiction, means, and methods. Again, this is, in general, we revised the system details to be more consistent with our capital projects. So our capital projects are very, very defined in nature, how we do things. We're providing better details so that the contracting community knows what we want. It's not vague, and they don't have to ask as many questions. That, in turn leads to better pricing for the consumers who are utilizing that contractor base. We formalized our lift station minimum requirements. These had remained mostly unchanged since the 90s and have been unofficially being enforced through a working document. We've changed to allow an allowance for contractor installation rather than relying on our services. That's in for two reasons. One, contractors may be able to do it faster than you can schedule us. And two, the fees we have in our fee schedule are dramatically undercharged compared to what the cost of service actually is. Rather than putting the burden on the utility to consistently update our fees for goods and services, we're opening the door for the contracting community to provide that service. We will still do it if we have to, and we're working on a fee update independently. We've added some references to other adopted guidance documents, which allow for some alternative means and methods, again, increasing the flexibility for the contracting community to perform the work. We're memorializing a transition of some authorities to the Department of Community Development. This has to do with side sewer inspections on residential private property and commercial private property. We will still review and inspect all of the utility main within our service areas. We made a slight modification for public cleanouts to be in cast iron with a concrete collar. If you've ever driven a lawnmower over a plastic box, we get that all the time. So we're trying to have a more permanent structure which designates public-private ownership, and that helps define the relationship and the ultimate responsibility for who's financially obligated for a fix on the property. And there are many other smaller changes within the document to update to be consistent with what we're doing today. A little bit of history. The 1996 standards were the original mechanism performed by the county to create development standards for the sewer utility. This action also included several other ordinances to create many of the forms. If you've ever had to fill out a form for the sewer utility that looked quite old, they came from 1996. Between 1996 and now, there were several attempts to update these standards in 2000 and 2015. Those efforts ultimately failed to navigate the formal adoption process, which is what we're going through today. The most recent attempt to update those standards was in 2020. That has become the working copy of our standards that we've been communicating to the contracting community and design community since. And that's out of an act of self-preservation because those 1996 standards are so delinquent and outdated. What you have before you, the 2025 standards, incorporates much of the work performed by those previous attempts, and it actually updates the format to be more consistent with some of our neighboring jurisdictions and will serve as a benchmark for future work. So, Commissioner Beam, you asked for a bit of a crosswalk in our last discussion. So what I've put on the screen here is how the original 1996 standards were organized and how the new standards are organized. We're moving from 7 divisions to 13 sections. At a very high level, we're going through 85 pages of standards to 83 pages of standards. You'll see that we're using the margins a little bit differently, so there is a little bit more heft to the document. And we've only changed our detail count from 32 to 36. It should be noted that the 96 standards included forms. We do not include our administrative forms in this document. But what this illustrates is we are taking a very vague and broad organization of the document and dialing it in into exactly what we want. The majority of the heft of the document comes from our lift station requirements. In 1996, it was unheard of to get a developer-built lift station. Now we see it very commonly, and we have to proactively say what we want because we inherit those systems for the life of it. And those are extremely expensive systems to construct, to maintain, and ultimately replace at the ratepayer's expense. This is just a snapshot of how we've changed the format. So on the left-hand side of the screen, this is how the document was organized per division. And on the right-hand side, we've tried to break it down into the logical parts and pieces of how you build something. And this is to aid our staff in how we navigate the standards as well as the design and construction community. And here we can see just how different they look. The formatting originally and the formatting we're going forward with today. We did model our format based on Pierce County. They're typically the leading entity in the area for county jurisdictions. We hear from the contracting community, you know, can you be consistent with other jurisdictions so we don't have to learn something new every time we show up on site. So we went over the differences last week, but what we have in this priority one, the means and methods, this is very consistent with what other jurisdictions are requiring today. With that, I open the floor for any comments or questions.
I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time and addressing some of the feedback from our last session and also taking the time to just realize how much just needs to be kind of deconstructed and reconstructed in the sense of more of like a logical flow and a little bit more intuitive finding through the document. As a licensed installer myself, I thoroughly appreciate this, and I think it's going to be very beneficial. It's going to allow a little bit more of a cooperative relationship with contractors and the county, and I think this is phenomenal. I think it's about 29 years too late, but I really appreciate it. Appreciate your efforts.
Thank you, and it's a huge collaborative effort. This exercise, we had 2 summers worth of interns working on this. It involved technical committees with each of our sub-disciplines, our electricians, mechanics, facilities maintenance, conveyance maintenance, management. It's not perfect, but it will serve as a benchmark when we continue to revisit this on a more frequent basis. We'd like to shoot for 2 to 3 years, not 29.
I wanted to commend you as well. Thank you for providing the old standards to look at. It was kind of a snooze fest, but you know, that's the sewer world. But with that being said, I did want to say thank you also for recognizing the importance of adding the lines specifically about emergency situations and being able to work collaboratively with the homeowner and allowing for that chargeback. So that was really great to see in the 1.7 section. The one question I do have, and I don't want to add any layers to what you've already done and provided to the through the hearing examiner process, but I noted a comment that I saw in Section 2 in the old standards. There was reference to develop in the developer's checklist details about the process for sanitary sewer connections and extensions. But I didn't see that in the new standards as far as the process for availability. So I was just kind of curious as to whether or not that's somewhere else. I'm sure that it is somewhere else, but if there was a reason as to why that was eliminated out of the new standards.
That's a great question. That's an excellent question. So the 1996 standards included a lot of administrative process, which we're trying to pull out of this document. This tells you how to build it, how to respond to something. We don't want to provide application guidance for a process that is in our municipal code, or Title 13. The sewer availability agreement process is something that will change fundamentally, and that will be a topic here soon. We've looked at it in depth with one of our financial consultants to identify how that process can better serve the county as well as the community. It's a very old and antiquated process, and it has many challenges and issues with it. We're very aware of it, and we're working on it actively. You're welcome.
Other comments?
Adrian?
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much. This is minor. I just saw the revision date on the 2025 standards draft is for, it says July 2025, but you would have revised it in August after our August 5th meeting. So it was just something I caught, if you would want to update that date. So it is reflective of, you know, the revision from our August 5th meeting. And then, yeah.
I'm surprised you didn't catch a few of the glaring spelling errors on the first couple pages either. I had a word processing failure, and so I couldn't fix that after the fact. For the hearing, I believe all the dates are appropriate. And the way that the package will look for the hearing discussion, there will still be some red lines on the details. That's because we don't want to engage our consultant to fix that until we have confidence that we have full recommendations from the Planning Commission or the Board of County Commissioners.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Hearing none, that will close the work study portion of this. And preview of coming attractions, we're standing by for the public hearing next time.
Oh, get excited. Okay, well, thank you all.
That opens up the second period of general comments. There are no more people online. Any comments from the room? Going once, going twice. I will now close the general comment period, and for the good of the order.
I had an opportunity. I missed the last meeting, and I was at a conference in St. Paul, and it was just very fascinating, interesting, and I hope it's something that I bring forward towards to the commissioners and DCD in the future. And it was all about how we can deconstruct our old buildings more sustainably and reuse the materials or to retrofit the buildings and adapt them into the kind of the new world. So it was just very interesting. So if you have any questions about that, I'd be happy to bore you with all the details. So thank you.
I'd like to be bored. Yeah, I'm very fascinated by that.
Other comments? Yes, ma'am.
Yes, this is available through the county website, but I just wanted to share, I learned that Kitsap County is launching a community survey, and so that's available for you to fill out and participate in, and so just wanted to elevate that opportunity for everyone.
Thank you. Hearing no further comments, I'm going to declare this meeting closed. Thank you very much.